Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Many, many people are going to have hard times making the choice as to whether to pay their power bill or buy groceries for their children.
Amid a looming gas shortage, lawmakers discuss the expensive option of importing liquefied natural gas. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 22nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Western Alaska prepares for flooding as ice jams move down the Yukon River.
What we really want people to do right now is get prepared on those lower stretches of the river.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAIN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
An Illinois man died last night after Alaska state troopers say he got trapped in mud near Hope during a rising tide and drowned. Troopers say 20-year-old Zachary Porter had been traveling on the mud flats along Turnagain Arm with a group of friends when he became stuck. One friend called 911 shortly before 6 p.m. and people at the scene tried to save him. Girdwood Fire and Rescue Chief Michelle Weston says firefighters and helicopters dispatched to the area off mile 11 of the Hope Highway to help local rescue crews, but there wasn't enough time.
Unfortunately, before we arrived on location, the individual was submerged, and then we were able to help with the recovery efforts this morning.
Weston says it was about a 45-minute drive for Girdwood fire crews to get to Hope, and she says mud rescues can take 10 to 30 minutes, so getting help quickly is crucial.
So there needs to be a threshold of time between when someone's stuck to when the crew gets there and arrives, and then for the crew to actually work to get the person unstuck. And you need to race usually against what the tide is doing.
Porter's body was recovered this morning. One man who tried to save him was flown to Anchorage with hypothermia. Emergency responders often warn about travel on the unpredictable and quicksand-like mudflats, which can trap people in rising tides. Porter's death comes 2 weeks after fire crews saved a fisherman from the mud near the mouth of the 20-mile river. Firefighters also saved a surveyor trapped up to his waist near Tidewater Slough in November. But it's been 34 years since someone died in the mudflats, according to the Anchorage Daily News. Weston says Sunday's call highlights the dangers of the flats.
Know that tide conditions move very quickly in Turnagain Arm. And then additionally, that ground you might have walked on the last time you visited a location might be totally different the next time.
If you are traveling on the mudflats, Girdwood firefighters caution people to go in groups so someone can get help if anyone gets trapped. People should also avoid staying in one spot for too long. Since statehood, Alaska has been an oil and gas powerhouse. But now, for the second time in just over a decade, utilities and lawmakers in South Central Alaska are talking about importing liquefied natural gas amid looming gas shortages in Cook Inlet. That means Alaskans will likely have to pay more, maybe even a lot more, in a state that already has some of the highest energy costs in the country. KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports in the first of 4 stories about Cook Inlet's energy crisis.
Perched high above Ketchumak Bay, Scott Waterman's house in Homer is a museum of energy-efficient technology.
It's a relatively complex system, but it's been in operation for almost 13 years now, and it's worked well over the time.
A heat pump hangs on the side of his garage. Out front, a hulking row of blue solar panels angle toward the high April sun.
Lots of people now thinking about how they can use solar to not necessarily just lower their costs of utilities, but to avoid the volatility.
that volatility is going to be inevitable as heating and electric utilities from Homer to Fairbanks, an area known as the Rail Belt, have to reconsider where they're getting their power. For a long time, they've sourced most of it from natural gas from Cook Inlet. But after the market for that gas peaked in the 1990s, it became much less profitable for big oil and gas companies to come in and make discoveries in the aging basin, and they lost interest. Energy prices for Rail Belt customers have already gone up in the last decade.
That's worrisome. If that's a trend that continues, many, many people are going to have hard times making the choice as to whether to pay their power bill or buy groceries for their children.
Today, just one company provides most of the power supply to utilities on the Rail Belt, and that company recently warned it won't commit to signing new gas contracts. Without local gas, utilities are talking about importing supply, and that means Alaskans on the Rail Belt will pay more for electricity, as much as 30% more in some cases. The impending gas shortages have been looming overhead for decades. The state has long forecasted that demand for gas in South Central would outpace supply without more production. And the most recent numbers estimate that could happen as soon as 2027. Still, over the years, Alaska's largely remained dependent on natural gas, building storage facilities to hold more and subsidizing production through big legislative packages.
And we just have put all our eggs in that basket ever since.
McKibben Jakinski is a retired oil and gas journalist in Nanilchik on the southern Kenai Peninsula. She's been following Cook Inlet natural gas since its production peak in the 1990s. And she says Alaska's always known natural gas was a bridge fuel and that Cook Inlet wasn't going to have enough to last a lifetime. Now she says the area's main oil and gas producer wants to drill on her property as it looks for more gas to meet its contracts.
It's the one leg under our stool, and when it moves, we just collapse. And we can't see beyond that, you know? We can't see beyond developing something else.
Alaskans aren't going to freeze or face blackouts. What's at stake here is cost. In the short term, utilities are considering new Cook Inlet gas supply contracts and imports of liquefied natural gas, or LNG. Earlier this year, Chugach Electric Association CEO Arthur Miller told state lawmakers that's not a step the utilities want to take.
We think that, unfortunately, would be a very unfortunate situation. A state as rich as Alaska is with natural gas to have to import LNG.
To get that LNG, utilities could go out to the spot market where gas can be more than twice as expensive as what they're paying now and is much more volatile in price. Or they'll have to lock into longer-term contracts if they can get them. So with decades of warning, how did Alaska get here? Peter Machicki is mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough and came to the Kenai in the 1980s to work in the then-thriving oil and gas industry. He has a theory.
Is it the nature of the beast? We get very comfortable very quickly when things seem solved, and we have a very difficult time having a long-term comprehensive plan of when we mobilize and when we don't.
He wonders what higher and more volatile energy costs could mean for his constituents.
And that's going to be a problem for us. I can't imagine the Rail Belt not having adequate supplies of natural gas.
Utilities say they're brainstorming solutions now. Whatever they decide, it'll have to be more than just a Band-Aid solution to keep Alaskans out of the same pattern they've been dealing with for decades. In order to look forward, though, we first have to look back. Up next, a look at the last supply crisis and what lawmakers did when faced with the same issue a decade ago. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Secret Service was all over Bethel for the First Lady's visit.
I was very intrigued by the Secret Service and them actually coming to Bethel, so I introduced myself. And I was able to have like a 30-minute conversation with one of them. They actually gave me this pin right here.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health. But did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Nathan Erfurth was arrested Saturday and charged with second and fourth degree sexual abuse of a minor. The 34-year-old Erfurth was a teacher at Soldotna High School and for the last 2 years president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association, or KPEA. KDLL's Riley Board reports.
Charging documents say a former student of Erfurth's reported years of sexual abuse to the Soldotna Police Department last month. Investigators with Alaska State Troopers say she reported knowing Erfurth since ninth grade when they developed a personal relationship while she was a student at Soldotna Prep, and he was her teacher. Their close relationship was investigated twice by Soldotna Police in 2016 and 2017, but they brought no criminal charges. According to Troopers, the student says she and Erfurth continued to communicate with the app Signal, which allows messages to disappear after being read. She told Troopers the two began a sexual relationship in 2017 while she was 17 years old, which continued for the next 2 years, usually at a small house on his property. In April, Troopers say they obtained a warrant and recorded a conversation between the former student and Erfurth, during which she told him she'd kept a journal documenting their encounters and that her partner had found the journal and planned to bring it to the police. According to Troopers, Erfurth expressed anger and frustration about this and said it would lead to him spending years in jail. Erfurth was arrested Saturday at his home without incident, according to a dispatch. Erfurth's lawyer, Eric Derleth, didn't return a request for comment before airtime. Clayton Holland, superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, said the district is aware of the charges. He said, quote, "Student safety and welfare is the highest priority for the district. We're working closely with law enforcement in this investigation and are unable to provide further comment at this time." A representative from KPEA did not return requests for comment about the status of the KPEA presidency before airtime. Erfurth was arraigned Sunday morning and his bail was set at $50,000. He's charged with a felony for second-degree sexual abuse of a minor and a misdemeanor for fourth-degree sexual abuse of a minor. His first pretrial appearance is set for 4 p.m. on May 31st. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Ice jams on the Yukon River have already caused extensive flooding in the eastern interior, with properties damaged in Circle and roads flooded in Eagle Village. And as a massive amount of water and ice moves downstream, more flooding is happening. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
There's a flood warning in effect for Russian Mission right now, and many other communities below Russian Mission have a flood watch in effect.
What we're seeing on the upper portions of the Yukon is there's still a lot of water coming down.
That's Jeremy Zadek, the spokesperson for the state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Zadek says there's significant flooding in Stevens Village. The water levels are very high in Galena, and Fort Yukon also had flooding. He wants people to know to expect high water levels.
What we really want people to do right now is get prepared on those lower stretches of the river. Talk to their friends and family members. Identify any elders or medically fragile people that might need to be moved to higher ground. Look at families with a lot of small children that might be in those low-lying areas and take some precautions there.
Zadek also recommends that people along the Yukon River look at places within their communities that could shelter people, whether that's with friends and relatives or if a school or something needs to be opened up. He also wants people to protect their vehicles, move boats, cars and trucks, four-wheelers, anything that they can to higher ground, and have things within homes ready to be elevated as well.
Some of these steps can really prevent damage to those vehicles that are going to be essential later on, as well as all of the personal possessions.
The Kuskokwim River Watch team flew up to the lower Yukon on Sunday, according to Zadek, and conducted some evaluations. He said the Civil Air Patrol has also done some overflights and reporting on conditions. The ice is moving, but there's intact ice at the mouth of the Yukon, and there's a lot of ice and water coming down the river.
So this is really a time for people to be aware of the conditions. They can check with the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center and see what flood watches, warnings, and advisories are in places.
Zadek recommends maintaining communication with neighbors and staying tuned to local media to stay apprised of those conditions on the river, and be ready to act if it looks like conditions are going to get worse. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Bristol Bay's commercial salmon fishery can be fast-paced and crowded. Many local fishermen staunchly support a regulation to keep the fishery's competition in check, a rule that limits the size of the boats. And the fleet got a finger wagging from the Alaska Wildlife Troopers earlier this year, a reminder to keep their boats within that limit. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the issue is top of mind as fishermen get ready for the upcoming season.
Commercial boats must measure 32 feet or less to fish in Bristol Bay. But Captain Aaron Frenzel says wildlife troopers received more complaints than usual about larger vessels last year. So after the season, they went over to boatyards on the east side of the fishery, King Salmon and Naknek, to see what was going on.
A lot of the stuff is below the waterline that we can't see on the water while we're out on the water inspecting vessels. So we started seeing some areas that just kind of expanded.
Those boats were a little bigger than what's allowed in regulation. The troopers decided to raise awareness among the fleet ahead of the next season. In February, they published a public letter outlining exactly what is included in the 32-foot measurement. Frenzel says they hope fishermen will bring their boat lengths into regulation this year, and troopers will be paying closer attention to what he calls performance-enhancing additions, things like outdrive mounts or hull extensions.
Maybe a vessel that's actually 34 feet in length, or has some kind of adaptation that provides a significant performance benefit to the vessel that's beyond the allowable length. Those are the type of vessels that we'll be taking a closer look at this summer and determining if we need to take enforcement action on.
Frenzel says troopers won't be targeting boats for transgressions due to safety or quality equipment. Bristol Bay's 32-foot rule has been a point of debate in many Board of Fisheries meetings over the years. Some fishermen argue that bigger boats could allow for more efficient harvests, better quality, and more money. But others say they would disenfranchise the local fishermen, who may have smaller boats and may not be able to buy into a more competitive fishery. So why did people start calling out bigger boats last year? Frenzel remembers what one fisherman told him.
Everything kind of was like an accordion. It got stretched out here and there until all of a sudden there were some vessels that were so stretched out that the flag started being flown by other fishermen, and that's what we started looking at.
Frenzel says the fishery has also changed a lot in the past 20 years. Newer boats have equipment that may make them a little bigger. This isn't the first time troopers have focused on the issue. Tom Glass is a commercial fisherman who lives in Dillingham. He says troopers were cracking down on the 32-foot limit in the early 90s when he was working as a deckhand. And some fishermen went to drastic measures to comply, by shortening the bow of their boat.
Some would just grind off a couple inches, and others would cut off like 2 feet. They were too long by 2 feet or maybe more.
At one point, Glass says, someone took a cut-off boat nose and threw it in the brush near the AC store in downtown Dillingham.
And after a while, there's a whole pile up in that area there of noses from the boats. It's just kind of funny, everybody getting their noses cut off that season.
Glass says there are plenty of those boats still around. Some of the fiberglass vessels have caps bolted on with the help of some sealant, while aluminum boats are welded up. Today, Glass says he's happy with the 32-foot limit, though he could definitely use an extra few feet in his engine room. Right now, he says, it's pretty crowded. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit rain.org. That's rain.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Teachers in the second largest school district in Alaska have voted to authorize a strike. The contract between the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District and the Mat-Su Education Association expired last July. The two sides began negotiating in January of 2022, but were unable to reach an agreement. Vicki Hewitt is president of the Mat-Su Education Association, which represents roughly 3,400 teachers and support staff.
They want our health care information. The Public Education Health Trust protects that information. If we move to Primera, they will have all of that information. We don't want them to have our health care information.
Hewitt says the union and school district could not agree on two issues: the district's attempt to move to a national health insurance provider and the district's proposal to increase teacher pay by 2% over a three-year contract, which Hewitt says does not keep up with inflation. 2 weeks ago, the district made their last best offer. Last week, the teachers' union voted to approve a strike. According to a union statement today, more than 90% of teachers voted in favor of a strike. The statement says teachers would not go on strike until the fall if an agreement is not reached over the summer.
We don't want to go on strike. We don't want to put our community through that. Our community has already been through so much with the decisions that the school district and the school board have made in the last 2 years. We don't want to do this.
Hewitt says Mat-Su teachers have never gone on strike, and she hopes they still won't have to. Both the district and union say they are willing to keep discussing the contract. The first day of the regular school year in the Mat-Su borough is set for August 15th. A new substance abuse treatment center for veterans and active military service members opened last week in Wasilla. The outpatient center, Banyan, Alaska, has space for 24 people. According to the Alaska Mental Health Trust, about 1 in 9 Alaskans need treatment for a drug or alcohol problem, but there's only space for a fraction of that. Sam Garcia is a community liaison for Banyan, Alaska. He says people often have to go out of state for treatment.
Now, if you get sent out of state, that means you're leaving your family, your kids, your sober support. And I don't believe you should have to do that to get help.
Garcia says the center tries to hire people with military experience and people in sobriety to work with patients. He says their staff is about 90% veterans. And many staff members, including Garcia, are in recovery.
When you're in a treatment center and you're working with somebody that you know has been through something similar, It makes you more effective at being able to reach them and kind of meet them where they're at.
Garcia says substance abuse issues and addiction often carry stigma and shame, and he says veterans and military service members may be especially vulnerable to stigma.
So there's a lot of fear behind voicing that you are having an issue or having this label put on you. So we're trying to make a safe place for people to say, hey, I need some help, and then be able to get back to life.
Garcia says being able to stay in Alaska for treatment might mean people reach out for help earlier. He says people don't need to hit rock bottom before they find treatment. First Lady Jill Biden visited Bethel last week along with a delegation of female Native leaders to promote the expansion of broadband coverage in rural Alaska, alongside the Secretary of Interior, CEO of Bethel Native Corporation, the First Lady of Alaska, and Bethel's mayor. But as KYUK's Sunny Bean reports, many Bethel residents say what they remember from the visit is the Secret Service.
For days before the First Lady landed in town, rumors swirled around Bethel. There were even rumors that the president himself might show up.
Joe Biden's coming?
Jill.
Oh, Jill Biden.
And as the Secret Service trickled in, planning and logistics were complicated. At first, the event was planned on the riverfront. But bad weather loomed, and on the day of the First Lady's arrival, Bethel woke up with a fresh coat of snow. Ultimately, they decided to go with the high school before they could start setting up for the federal delegation.
So we had our band concert scheduled here for last night for a number of weeks.
That's Bethel Regional High School Athletic Director Darren Lieb. The next day, Biden was scheduled to arrive in the evening. So while the students sat in class, the Secret Service started securing the school. Kids stuck around as metal detectors were set up in the hallways and security staff swept the school. Many classes got lost in the shuffle as announcements over the intercom directed movement around the building. It may have been easier to just let the kids go for the day, but Lieb says it's tricky to make last-minute changes to a busing schedule.
Our buses, they're on a system. So Wednesday, Gladys Jung Elementary, they get early release today. And so we couldn't have early release because of them, because of the busing issues.
But the kids seemed to enjoy the commotion, like freshman Jaden Culp. At first, he didn't even notice they were there.
So like 50 of them just walked into the cafeteria while we were doing work.
And Metti Alimi, who wore a suit with an American flag pin.
I was very intrigued by the Secret Service and them actually coming to Bethel, so I introduced myself. And I was able to have like a 30-minute conversation with one of them. They actually gave me this pin right here.
Other students said they felt protected as Secret Service swarmed the building in uniforms, earpieces, and holstered guns. Like junior Zach Chase.
I feel a lot safer now. It just feels more safer. Yeah.
During lunch, the Secret Service took over the cafeteria. So students played basketball in the gym. Then they took over the gym. By mid-afternoon, the entire school was heavily controlled, and that led to some confusion. Just before the last period of the day, kids were unsure of where to go.
Stay in your groups, please. Ms. Maranza's over there.
Mr. Reeves
over here.
Teachers tried to keep things under control.
Hey, Reeves, you're back upstairs, for real.
What if we get kicked out this time again?
Watch us get kicked out.
As the 4 o'clock bell rang,
we all gotta go, even us staff. So once you guys go,
students quietly threw around theories about the CIA, passing through newly assembled metal detectors stationed in the front hall of the school. Students poured out just as a crowd was beginning to form outside. Jerry Fredericks was excited to see all the powerful women up on stage, including U.S. Representative Mary Peltola and Anna Hoffman, who heads up Bethel Native Corporation.
We're so proud of Mary and, you know, Anna, our local hero, and just bringing Jill here. It's something. You could hear me trembling, so that was fun. I never thought, I've lived here all my life, and I'm almost 60, and I never thought anything like this could happen. But it was awesome. So special.
It took a few days, a frantic preparation, and it looked like a lot of chaos. But in the end, Jill Biden made it.
You know, I want to say thank you to all of you for standing out in the cold. Apparently, a lot of you had to be out there for a couple hours, and I apologize for that. But I'm glad that you're here, and, you know, that it's nice and warm inside. Kuyana, thank you. Thank you.
In Bethel, with help from Evan Erickson, I'm Sunny Bean.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Chris Clint and Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks and Riley Board in Kenai, Francisco Martinez-Cuello and Sonny Bean in Bethel, and Izzy Ross in Dillingham. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.